So this is a project with many, many collaborators. It's actually a project that involves a lot of different elements. So instead of trying to focus on any one area of it, I'm going to try and give you an overview of what the main ideas and results are so far. And these might change by the time one of my collaborators speaks, maybe in a few weeks. This will take only half an hour to write the... Okay. So...
You missed
it. Oh, you're right. I missed it. Oh, yeah.
Whoops.
Don't anybody say who. This gets on the net, right?
Yeah, they may be watching you live.
I wonder how I did that. That parentheses doesn't mean anything. So, the main goal of the talk will be to explain how the three words in the title actually show up in this project. So I'll start with some brief introductory comments and a little motivation for why we started looking at the things we looked at. The second part of the talk will be a discussion of gauge bundles on tori, of all things, and some type 1 hadronic compactifications. How low can people actually read on this blackboard? Just scream if it can't see it. We'll then move to orientopoles, part 3. And I suspect I'll be running out of time at that point.
By the time you've told us what a triple is?
By that time you know what a triple is, yeah. But we won't have got the fluxes at that point. But hopefully we'll at least briefly discuss M and F theory compactifications. So unfortunately this is a very long project, more than 2 years in the offing, and there are lots of sections, lots of results, and lots of topics. And there's no way I could possibly present all of them in by cookie time, so this is really going to be schematic. There's lots of things we don't understand, too, I should say. At least I don't understand. So let me just start with some introduction and background. It's natural to ask how many components how many disconnected components there actually are in the string moduli space. For example, if we took compactifications with maximal supersymmetry, example just being Rn cross a torus, or AES cross some spheres, maybe cross some tori, we know that the moduli space is very restricted. There are very few compactifications, and we can say an awful lot about these compactifications. Maybe they have u-duality, etc. In these cases, all the compactifications are M or type 2, since hadronic automatically has fewer supersymmetries. So 32 is maximal here. The question we wanted to answer, really, is how many components there actually are in the moduli space of string compactifications with 16 supercharges. So, for example, in D equal 10, we would have type 1 hadronic as the only possibilities. In D equal 9, we again have type 1 and hadronic, the standard component. We have an additional possibility. We have the CHL string, right? Which is roughly constructed by taking take your compactification circle, and as you go around the circle, you exchange the two E8s. And this projects one of them out, so you get a reduced rank. Reduce the rank by 8.
Sub that, is
Isn't there another component, M theory, on the Klein borel that doesn't have any gauge group at all? Nine dimensions.
Yeah, I'm not finished with nine dimensions yet. There's also an orientopole quantification, which I'll discuss actually when we reach the orientopole section. These are just examples of different components. This is not a claim to be a complete discussion yet. But the one you're discussing is one that has a plus orientopole at one fixed point and a minus at the other fixed point. So no D-brains are required. But you can see that the number of components changes and various strings get identified and new strings appear as we go down in dimension. So type 1 and heroic, well, spin 32 heroic and EA cross EA heroic become equivalent on the circle, but we also pick up this CHL component. So we find a new component in the moduli space. So it's natural to ask what happens as you go down lower in dimension. And something strange happens as you, well, 8 already becomes interesting and 7 becomes even more interesting. And the focus of this work is really going down to 7 dimensions. And we'll find that there are actually lots of components in the even in the perturbative string moduli space, which weren't, I think, known before. So to each of these components, we typically have dual descriptions. So let's just take a case down in 7 dimensions. So the heroic on a torus, as is well known, has a dual description in terms of M theory on K3. And in 8 dimensions, it would be F theory on K3. And we can ask, if we have new components in the moduli space in 7 dimensions, what would be their dual descriptions? That's only one of the primary motivations for this. Another major motivation is that the duals that we'll find are actually kind of exotic. They don't look like conventional M or F theory compactifications, at least some of them. They have fluxes of various kinds turned on. So the first example of this was found by Schwartz and Sen, who constructed a dual to the CHL string on the 4th torus in terms of type 2A on a particular K3 surface with some Ramon-Ramon one-form flux, discrete one-form flux turned on. And turning on this Ramon-Ramon one-form flux actually killed off some of the moduli in the compactification, so that this theory would reduce rank, the moduli space is matched, precisely. So it's very natural to ask, if you just take singularities like orbifolds, what kind of Ramon fluxes can you turn on in type 2 string theory for, say, an ADE singularity? How do you classify them in string theory and also in M theory? This will lead us to a number of strange puzzles, which at the moment do not seem to have natural resolutions.
So if you had a flux for the field strength of this one form through a two-cycle on the K3, doesn't that make the two-cycle want to expand?
It's a zero-energy flux. It's torsion for the field strength. But it doesn't change the geometry of the... So this looks like a conventional superconformal field theory if you didn't know about the flux. So it's like discrete torsion, actually, but for a Ramon field.
But usually that doesn't...
Discrete torsion can freeze a singularity, right? For a B field. We turn on a B field.
But there isn't discrete torsion because of the B field in this example.
There's no B field at all in this example, actually.
I'm saying if you asked whether you could have had discrete torsion, which from the usual proof theory question at H2 of the U1 coefficients, the answer is no.
No, H2 equivariant could be yes. For example, if you try to generalize that naively to Ramon fluxes, you'll get answers that won't agree with what we seem to be getting. Okay, so those are just some introductory comments by way of motivation. So let's go to the first part of the title, triples. So we have to start by considering gauge bundles. So the first part of the talk is all concerned with perturbative string theory, where we basically feel we understand what's going on most of the time. And we're going to start by looking at type 1 heteroic on our torus. So this only preserves 16 supersymmetries. And it's natural to ask, what kind of gauge bundle can we put on the torus? Well, we don't want to warp the geometry, so the field strength for the gauge bundle had better vanish. So these are all flat bundles on the torus. To specify a flat connection on the torus, we have to specify n holonomies for an n torus. Which are basically just Wilson lines for these gauge fields of a heterological type 1 string. But these aren't unique, of course. You can get another set by conjugating, by making a global gauge transformation on any given Wilson line. So the question we want to ask is, how many different choices of gauge bundle can we actually put on the torus? Kind of an innocent sounding question, since everything is flat. It looks like it should be the simplest case to study. So let's just go dimension by dimension. So we can just start with a circle. Well, topological types for a gauge bundle in a circle are classified by the number of components of the group, pi naught of g. So to get something interesting here, we really need a group with more than one component. Otherwise, every connection will be connected to the trivial connection. We can just continuously turn it on or off. So simple examples of groups with non-trivial components would be, for example, EA cross EA, where there are two factors. So to classify really the non-trivial choices, here.
This is a connected group, right? It's not simple, but it's connected, and you can go from any element. Pi zero is trivial.
There's an adderomorphism, which is what I'm about to explain. Okay, so to get something non-trivial. Okay, so
unless Lubush is quite right.
Sorry.
It's not pi zero is trivial.
There's no non-trivial type here, but I'm going to classify a non-trivial connection which is not connected to the identity. Okay. No, it's not pi zero. Actually, pi zero is not going to play. Pi zero will always be a choice here if we took a bundle.
The pi zero doesn't mean anything.
Right, for this case. No. Okay. How should I say this?
Pi zero would classify the topologically inequivalent bundles, right. But you're looking at flat connections.
Right.
It could be inequivalent flat connections.
I'm not classifying by
trivial.
I mean, the coarsest classification will be the topological type. So you'll fix the topological type initially by pi naught of g. But then you can still ask, is it going to be a non-trivial? Are there non-trivial components in the marginalized space of flat connections beyond the topological type? And we'll see that they actually are. So this is actually a case already where there is a component, which I was. Let me describe it, then you'll see why it's not connected to the identity. In fact, it's exactly the one that Joe described quite some time ago that gives you CHL. So, any connection, let me pick a connection omega on the circle, then any connection gives us a map. Well, if G is in the component connected to the identity, let me call it G naught, then any connection will give us an automorphism off that connected component. So if G were in that component, it'd be kind of trivial. We wouldn't get anything new. But if G were not in that component, was actually an outer automorphism, we'd get something new. So we look for groups where they're actually outer automorphisms. And there we'll actually get something new. So for example, for any group of the form G1 plus some factors, we'll have outer automorphisms just corresponding to permutations of those factors. So spin 32 actually does have an outer automorphism, but spin 32 mod Z2 doesn't. So in string theory, that one case doesn't give us anything interesting on a circle. There's an outer great looking skeptical. There's an outer automorphism corresponding to flipping the two spinner representations in spin 32. It doesn't descend to spin 32 mod Z2. But for EA cross EA, is a natural one. That flips the two EA factors. And if we consider the gauge bundle, where as we go around the circle, we change these two EA factors, act by this outer order morphism, we reduce the rank by 8. We left with just a diagonal EA. And this was Joe's version of the CHL string in 9 dimensions. Is that? You happy?
Which was discovered first by Lance Dixon, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, before any of this, yeah.
Okay, I wasn't aware. So he's referencing
Yeah, maybe you'll suck him back into the subject.
That would take a big suck.
Good to have you back on the
Okay. Let's just restrict the connected groups. Yeah, this is going out wide. Yeah.
What happened to
Michael?
He's broadcasted.
Okay. If we restrict the connected groups now, well, we always have the possibility of taking, so in all of this story, we can always take the construction we did in D dimensions, compactify in a circle, and put a trivial connection on that extra component of the circle. So we can always compactify this guy down, or the trivial component down, and just get those automatically. So we'll have the usual spin 32 mod Z2, the CHL, and EA58, and these guys are now in the same moduli space. By our old famous T. Lowley. But on the two torus, we also have a new possibility for spin 32 mod Z2. There's a new topological type, which was characterized by this generalized second Stieffel-Whitney class. So we could take two, let me do it like this. The Z2 we quotient out by here in spin 32, let me represent it by -1. In spin 32, then we could take two Wilson lines, omega 1 and omega 2, which don't commute in spin 32 because of the minus sign, but will actually commute in spin 32 mod Z2. So these guys, this is basically a parallel to an obstruction to the usual obstruction to the spin structure that you get on a manifold that's not spin, but here you're actually obstructing vector structure. I believe Joe was also on the paper for this as well, first. And Lance did not do this first, I think.
Right.
So here, there's actually a non-trivial topological type on a two torus that's shown up. So we have compactifications then of spin 32 of the type 1 string, either with vector structure or without vector structure. And the rank reduction here. So this is so if you're in a compactification without vector structure, you're disconnected from the trivial connection. You can't smoothly get there, and the rank is actually reduced, again by 8, coincidentally the same as the CHL string. But actually, it's not a coincidence. The two are actually equivalent by T duality in 8 dimensions. So, in reality, CHL and no vector structure are part of the same moduli space in a way that's similar to EA cross EA and spin 32 mod Z2, the trivial component. Okay, I still haven't got the triples, but now we can get the triples. Well, again, we can just dimensionally reduce the cases we had before in eight dimensions and just put a trivial connection or just something connected to the identity on the extra circle. That doesn't introduce anything very new. But here is actually a new choice. It's not a new topological class, but there are actually disconnected components in the moduli space of flat connections. So there'll be two different moduli spaces of flat connections, and there won't be any path within the space of flat connections that gets you from one to the other. This is something that shows up first on T3. And there's a nice example of this. I should say, this is critical to getting the right count of vacua in N equal 1 Young Mills when you look at groups other than SUN and SPN. So
Sava, are you first restricting to simply connected groups?
Yes.
So you don't have
logically
distinct?
Yeah. I'm always taking pi naught of G to be trivial now. Topologically,
You're sort of going between two different things, which is making it hard for me to follow the talk. There's the topological classification of flat bundles, and then there's the components of the space of flat bundles.
Right. So, coarsest invariant is the specified topological type, initially. So I'm assuming you fix your topological type.
Yeah.
And within a class of given topological type, there are still going to be disconnected components in the moduli space of flat connections.
Right.
Of this kind.
Is it topological type of what?
Of the bundle on T3.
Principal bundle or vector bundle?
Principal bundle or vector bundle.
What kind of bundle?
Bundle of flat connections on T3. There's no new topological types on T3 beyond those we already discussed.
The relevant question is the topological type of the principal bundle. The vector bundle is just some representation of that. So you're fixing that.
I'm fixing that, right.
In particular, if pi naught and pi one
right.
are both trivial, then you have no interest.
Right.
Now you can talk about
pi. Pi naught, pi one is still just classes that we've already seen give us non-trivial bundles in higher dimension.
I mentioned this because you just introduced two Polytony classes.
Right.
Which wouldn't have been, which would also be relevant in T3.
So all the topological types we discussed before in higher dimension are there on lower dimensions too. There's no new one on T3 or T4 or T5.
Wrong.
Was that wrong? Okay, I will go to T5.
T4, you have P1 for any.
Flat bundle.
Right. Well,
flat bundle? No.
Okay.
No.
Of the groups. Mm-hmm.
Not for a flat one. But I won't go ahead. I won't make claims about lower than T3. But certainly for T3, I'm not introducing anything more than you pick your choice of vector structure or no vector structure. For these two cases, I'm assuming pi zero is going to be trivial as well. So what is a triple then? So let me just give you an example, a very explicit example. For SO7, say, on T3, this is the first case where the index calculation didn't agree with what was expected. And if one Young Mills and the resolution was the existence of this extra component. And here we can parameterize these very explicitly. 1, 1, minus 1. There's three Wilson lines. That's 1, minus 1. Okay. Minus one. So these three are all commuting. They're all diagonal. They all commute. But they can't all be written in the form e to the pi I something. Let's call it I. They can't all be written in the form of, they can't all be put into the Cartan or shown to be put in the Cartan. And this is actually the first and simplest example of a triple.
So they break the group to G2.
Well, if you try to, okay, so let's just see what goes wrong. If you try,
They obviously all have that form.
Yeah.
They all have that form, but you can't simultaneously put them all in that form.
Okay.
Oh, because
right.
You must combine them to pairs or like minus ones, right? So that you can understand its rotation by pi in a point. That is not able to fathom in SO7.
Not in SO7, right.
Aren't they already all in that form?
Not in SO7.
No.
Oh, not in SO7.
Right, so you want the, right, so the generators of SO7 are going to be anti-symmetric. So if you want them all anti-commuting, you want them all commuting with each other, all these SIs would have to commute. The SIs have to commute, right, for this to be the case. Right. So you want all of the SIs to commute.
And to be a generator of SO7.
And to be a generator of SO7, and that's not possible. This is a case which actually, if you're in this component, there are actually no moduli to perturb around in this case. So you actually break the gauge group completely. There is no unbroken gauge symmetry here.
You know, but these two, if I can call the generators, are precisely the three Z2s used by choice to construct Z2-Volnum and manifolders and orbifold of Torus.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
In which representation? In the vector? No.
In the fundamental set representation of Z2.
This is definitely an isolated component in the moduli space. I mean, it's dimension zero.
Oh, I don't find it's not isolated, right? But there is a residual gauge group.
That preserves all three?
You're saying the content of the omega ions is G2?
Yes.
Could be. How do we characterize these different components?
How do we understand that we can run the form? Because
how do we understand? You could just try and perturb it and see whether or not there are any solutions. But that's not, not the cleverest way to do it.
Is this supposed to be obvious that you can't do?
No. No, I'm just saying that it actually is isolated. It's not critical. I mean, the cases we'll look at actually won't be isolated. There will be flat connections around. There will be a moduli space of flat connections around a component. But this particular one happens to be isolated for SO7. I guess we could try and prove it if you want, but if we do that, we won't get very far, I think. It's fine. With everything, yeah. Yeah, if anything, wait, so if any element...
I think the answer to your question is that there's some finite subgroup of G2, and it was bigger than the finite subgroup of
G3. There's a finite subgroup of G2 which would actually commute with all this?
Yeah, that's the sense in which this thing preserves G2, because there's some finite subgroup which is bigger than the
discrete.
But it's not
that right. Yeah. Oh, I see, okay. A generic feature here is that when you're in one of these components characterized by some triple, you have again rank reduction of various kinds. And we can characterize these components by the integral of the Chern-Simons invariant over the 3 torus. So the integral of ADA. Over the 3 torus. And this is actually constant over a given component of the moduli space. And it's not only just a constant over a given, firstly, it's not integer in general, it's some fraction. And that fraction actually characterizes a given component of the moduli space. Actually, computing these things is kind of tricky if you don't have an explicit presentation of the connection. But fortunately, it was done by various groups for essentially every case now of interest. So what cases are of interest for us? Well, we care that E8 bundles on T3. And I'm going to characterize them by the discrete group for reasons that hopefully will become clear in a moment.
You're going to take Chern-Simons modulo 1, huh?
Yeah, this is all mod Z. V6. So here the Chern-Simons invariants. All Chern-Simons invariants are going to be integers p over the order of this group, where p and q are relatively prime. So here Two sums of area would be 1/2, 1/3, and 2/3, 1/4, and 3/4, 1/5, 2/5, 3/5, and 4/5, etc. There's only one case left, so I'll just do 1/6 and 5/6.
So you can trace this in which
just
times
one. The trace would just be in just in the adjoint, wouldn't it? Yeah.
It's 1 over 16 pi squared g, where g is the dual constant number times the trace in the adjoint.
Yeah, I'm dropping all kinds of factors here. H. H is dual constant. Right. And let me put the trivial component in here too. Okay, I'll skip the trivial. So put down the maximum unbroken subgroup you can get in each component as well. For each of these triples, C4 is A1, and these are empty. There's no unbroken maximal subgroup. And lastly, I just put down the dimension of the moduli space, 24, which is just 3 times 8. Oh, that's the maximal case, sorry. 12, which is 6, 3, 0, 0. So the last two cases are actually isolated. So a priori, we have 12 components for the space of E8 gauge bundles on T3, 12 disconnected components. If we include the trivial one and each of these Trent Simons ones separately. So if we're embedding E8 cross E8, we could a priori have had 144 different components to the moduli space of E8 strings, which are essentially generalizations of CHL if they were all to exist, which they don't. But gauge theory doesn't rule them out a priori. Now we can ask the same question for type 1. And now we'd have to fix the topological type. So either we'd have to be talking about bundles with vector structure or without vector structure. And in this case, what we find is a case with 1, a case with Trent Simons invariant 1/2, a case with Trent Simons invariant 0, 1/2, and 1/4 and 3/4. This is the standard component, D16, with SL32 as a maximal gauge group, B12, BN cross CN. Okay, so these two guys have vector structure, and these two components do not have vector structure. Four components, excuse me. So there are a lot of components. There's space of gauge bundles, even on a three torus. And things get a lot more complicated if you go down below a three torus. But the answer, there's a classification of flat connections on a three torus. If you go lower, there actually is no classification at the moment. Okay, people are drifting away. They're not a good sign. What?
Are you sure about that, Sam?
Yeah.
I mean, Trent Simons invariants for higher dimensional Poron.
No, there are things like quadruples
and quintuples as you go down.
That's right. There are also higher Trent Simons invariants.
I'm sure there is no proof of a classification, and I'm quite certain. Really?
I am sure that Cheeger Simons invariants are invariant flat bundles.
I'm sure it's a invariant, but why should there be a one-to-one?
I'm asking a question.
Right. I mean, we know that there are non-trivial quadruples, etc. We weren't sure how to measure them, so maybe that's the way to go.
There certainly are invariants with distinct components. My question was whether classification.
No. I mean, the question of the classification is not known beyond T3 at this point. But it would certainly need things it'd be critical to know, just to get a handle on all the possible Hadronic type 1 classifications. So we have a natural constraint here. We try to compactify heroic string on a torus, it better be anomaly free. Now, for these bundles, anomaly cancellation is a non-trivial condition. What does anomaly cancellation tell us in a corpuscle? Again, I'm not putting factors in. We have our favorite relation between the three form, which in this case has to be trivial as a class. Well, firstly, on the torus, the transimers invariant of the spin connection vanishes. So for H to be well-defined, in this case vanishing, because we have no energy on our space, metric is flat, the total transimers invariant, just integrate this on both sides over T3, and we get that the total transimers invariant should vanish. Now, this is a very strong condition. It gets rid of essentially all of these potentially interesting spin 32 mod Z2 compactifications, which have non-zero transimers invariant, are inconsistent because of this anomaly. So the only cases we get left from here are the usual component with vector structure and the component without vector structure. The additional components would all have non-zero transimers invariant and would not satisfy anomaly cancellation. E8, however, is still pretty interesting because we can just take one E8 factor, we can embed one transimers invariant. The other E8 factor, we can embed the opposite transimers invariant, and we get a consistent compactification. So we, out of these 144 options, we still have 12 compactifications, which now should be consistent. I mean, there are no additional constraints that we know of. So at least as perturbative string compactifications, they should all make sense. And that's a lot of additional components with pretty bizarre gauge groups showing up. Okay. Oh, what is the... What's my time, actually?
It's 10 past 2.
10 past 2. Okay, so I have to win?
Well...
When did I start? 1:30.
You started at 1:30. Okay. The hard limit is 3.
Right.
Are these connected by going away from
the modular
space?
Yeah. Well, sure, if you push up your energy, you can jump from one component to the other. Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, there are different classical strings back here, but you can imagine there's tunneling from one to the other by some.
Yeah, but that's not stranger than any other
no, I know
set that. Of string back here, which, you know, you could tunnel between, presumably, you're willing to pump enough energy.
But no, but then if you ask, well, what I approved, back here, then you have to find an analog of
sort of
data.
If you want to see instanton effects, lift some of them or something. That would be actually this is a really nice class to try to think along those lines in principle. Because it's sort of they're not topologically disconnected, they're just disconnected via sort of a very weak just the space, just flat connections. I mean you can sort of imagine doing this sort of in the field theory limit and trying to see what would happen. Yeah. I don't want to explain it. Okay, so I'll just mention briefly. There's a long song and dance about asymmetric orbital folds that one can insert here, which will go on for hours. And so I will not even go there today, I think. Perhaps one of the other people who comes will speak on it. Well, you can actually construct these things as asymmetric orbital folds. And they have this dual interpretation of nice compactifications with a very funny looking gauge bundle, and on the other hand, things which we don't usually think of as geometric. These asymmetric orbital fold constructions. And it's actually very useful in many ways because you get a lot of insights into the moduli spaces of these compactifications, which I haven't discussed at all yet. It's a direct construction of in a special point in the moduli space. Yeah.
You're saying it's literal?
Yeah. I mean, the left-wing reaction is just on the gauge part of the lattice. So your quotient thing, you're implementing this. You can construct these in terms of some automorphism associated to Z2, Z3, Z4, Z5, or Z6 along one cycle of the torus, and the other two components are in the usual Ryan compactification. And then that allows you to actually just construct these things in a very nice way as asymmetric orbifolds. And you can extend down and actually get these quadrupoles and quintuples out, actually, in lower dimensions. But that's a long story, and I want to actually... let me write out the moduli space, or list the moduli spaces for these guys. I feel I should have the trivial one here too. So let me move this up. I think we should be keeping track here of E8 bundle, sorry. Go ahead.
If I just interpolate the field space between two of those guys and I look at your anomaly information, what happens to that?
Oh, if you try to pump up.
Yeah, you interpolate
by
itself. Between the
yeah. Yeah, you would jump up in the same way, right? So that. So you could. Yeah.
Also, your asymmetric waterfalls automatically give you only the possible things.
You see that they're anomalous. Also, I mean, there's another way to see anomaly cancellation, just from level matching in the asymmetric waterfall.
They don't satisfy the level.
Exactly. Yeah, it comes out in a very pretty way. Actually, you can just get out all these results that you see from this gauge bundle geometric picture directly from the asymmetric waterfall construction. I said 12 compactifications here. That's a lie, right? Because let's just take this case, the Z3 case. I have to embed Trans-Simons invariant 1/3 in one E8, 2/3 in the other E8, to give you an integer Trans-Simons invariant. But of course, if I flip the two, I don't get a new compactification. All I've done is put, 2/3 in the first one, what I call the first one, and 1/3 in the second one. So actually, there are going to be six E8 compactifications now that we see. Ah, here, good. So, yeah, I thought I set that by. is that okay? Actually, 1/5 and 4/5 and 2/3 and 2/5 and 3/5 are related by discrete gauge symmetry. So, in fact, they're all equivalent. So, it's actually one Z5 triple rather than two, as you might have thought from this embedding. And we'll actually see that geometrically in about 3 minutes, I hope. So let me actually just list the moduli spaces. There are so many different constructions of these things that it's actually quite something to explain. I mean, there would not be time to explain the asymmetric waterfall in any reasonable way. So let me just put the lattices in, because we learned something from the lattices. So for the Z2 triple, we're going to see a lattice which is actually the same as the Mikhailov lattice for CHL in 7 dimensions. So you might immediately suspect that CHL and the Z2 triple are actually going to be related because they have the same moduli space. And actually one can show by direct T-duality that the Z2 triple includes CHL in this moduli space. So they're T-dual to each other. And you can actually construct an explicit T-duality between the two. This guy. Z3, Z4. We have always, gamma 3/3 is just sitting there in all of these. The Z5 and the Z6 is just gamma 3/3. Okay. I want to point out one more feature of these lattices. We can look at the complement of these lattices in the K3 lattice. If I didn't write. Oh, I did write it right there. And if we look at the so we call these lattices lambda. If we look at their complement, we see roughly what has been frozen out by turning on this gauge bundle. So here, that's nothing, it's just empty. Here we freeze out a D4 plus D4. Here we freeze out E6 plus E6, E7 plus E7, and everything else is E8. And this is going to be important for us briefly when we discuss bizarre-looking entropy compactifications and choices of free-form flux. We're going to get some very strange-looking rules, which will be mimicking the geometry, which will correspond to compactifications of M-theory on a K3 with frozen singularities of this kind. Okay. Well, what else do we know? The other natural construction we have of perturbative string vacuum with this much supersymmetry is real orientables. This is another long song and dance, which I'm going to cut way down. Way down, and just make the following remark. So we can classify, so there are four kinds of orientable plane. In the coarser sense, there's a minus and a plus orientable P plane, say, adding charge plus or minus 2 to the, whoops, I should get it right. Joe, what's the right normalization? To the P what? Minus 5.
9 is
16. Right? So this will be the guy that if you stack B brains here, you would get SON. And this will be the guy that if you stack B brains there, you get SPN. But this is definitely not a sufficiently refined classification of orientables. In addition, there is minus prime and plus prime, which differ from minus and plus by a discrete Ramon flux, actually. And if you stack brains here, you would get SO2N plus 1. So you have this half-stuck D-brain in this one case. Well, if you stack brains here, you would get SPN again. Now, minus prime and plus prime don't actually exist for P greater than or equal to 6. They're actually anomalous.
So we should write down
for if you want to include these guys. Right. So any compactification above, like on a circle or a two torus, etc., you would only include minus and plus. And there are various ways of showing that, which I won't get into. Or I'll get into some of the asks. But,
the plus ones have positive tension. Is that right?
No, they will have negative tension. No, sorry, they were positive. No, wait.
The normal ones have negative tension.
The normal,
minus
has negative.
Plus has positive tension.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's going with the charge. It's going with the sign of the charge, essentially, right?
And the plus prime is also positive.
Right. Plus prime and plus differ only by a very subtle Ramon Z2 charge, which is actually not something you would see easily, actually. It's kind of hard to measure. But you can argue it must be there. So let me just list what happens very briefly.
Plus is not the same as anti-minus, right?
That's correct. It's not the same. So, yeah. Mm.
Oh, right. But then it's the
difference by flipping the tension as well as the charge.
Right.
What is an anti-minus?
Well, I don't think there is an anti-minus. It has the same tension but opposite charge.
Right.
Breaks the opposite supersymmetry.
Right.
Breaks the opposite supersymmetry. I'm not sure how you would construct that.
GSO
projective.
Right. Oh, you would do. Oh, so within a given. Oh, I see. No. Oh, you've always break supersymmetry if you try and include both. You're saying.
That's right.
Yeah. So there will only be one that you see.
Both have negative tension,
right.
So you have negative energy.
Okay. So here I'm going to say that we classify I'm going to say this without explaining really why it's true, that we classify orientables on some space M by equivariant cohomology. Basically, we have to figure out where we can put a B field. So plus and minus here differ really. The real difference here is the sign of the RP2 diagram for a closed string, encircling the plus orientable versus the minus orientable. And the plus differs by a relative minus sign. So that minus sign, so that can be interpreted as putting a B field basically at a fixed point of some orientable compactification. So you can actually go through and from the closed string perspective classify possible arrangements of plus or minus orientables. Okay, so, well, we can just start. In 10 dimensions, you just have minus, or you can have plus. Plus will break supersymmetry, so we only care about minus, and minus is a standard type 1 construction. It's just type 1 with 32 grains, right? So I'm going to just use, I hope this notation is clear. Minus being just 109 minus length of all plane. Those are really only two possibilities. In 9 dimensions, we could have minus, minus. So we're on a circle, right? We have two fixed points. So there are two length of all planes. They can be minus, minus, plus, minus, minus, plus, which are diffeomorphic, and plus, plus. So plus, plus again breaks supersymmetry. Minus, minus is the conventional guy. And plus, minus is something new. This is the case that Lugosz mentioned at the very beginning. It has no D-brains, because it has net charge zero, has no enhanced gate symmetry, and it actually doesn't appear in our list of commutations here at all. It's something new. So from the oriental construction, we already get something non-trivial showing up. We get this plus-minus guy appearing. Now I'm going to use random pieces of board and just continue the oriental discussion here briefly. In 8 dimensions...
So which string theory are we in?
Well, it depends on the dimension. So as we go, either type 2A or type 2B. So you're going to either by omega z2 or whatever gives you the evolution, basically.
So even D is going to be type 2B and
on
D is type 2A?
Even D, yeah. Yeah, I apologize. This is very schematic instead of giving like a complete discussion. But as I say, each section of this silly paper is an entire talk. So maybe I should have actually just spoken on one. But I thought I would try to overview it. In D equal 8, we get compactifications of these guys. So now as we go down a dimension, we always get the component we had before, just compactified on a circle. So of course, we'll just get type 1. All right, minus to the 4. Plus squared minus squared. Which has come from the higher dimensional case. But we get something new again. We get plus, minus, minus, minus. So this is an oriental pole with half a unit of B-pill flux. So this guy is actually equivalent to type 1 with no vector structure. So we actually have an oriental pole dual in 8 dimensions of type 1 with no vector structure, or CHL. They're all in the same moduli space. So we have multiple realizations of that particular component of the moduli space. Something interesting happens in D equals 7. So again, we can compactify these guys down and just get the compactifications to lower dimensions. But we have a new possibility here. Let's see, we can get minus to the 8th. That's just the usual type 1 string. Minus to the 6 plus squared. That's a compactification of no vector structure down to 7 dimensions. So that should now include the Z2 triple, which is in the same moduli space as CHL and no vector structure. But then we get the compactification of minus of this guy with no D-brain charge, Lugosz's M3 description of CHL. Not CHL, M3 description of this one interval the Mobius model. This one's Klein bottle. But this is not unique anymore. There are different ways of actually arranging these oriental ball planes at the vertices, say. Let's just put them at the vertices of the cube. So the naive compactification would be minus, minus, plus, 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 plus. So just think of a cube. We put all the pluses on one side, all the minuses on one side. But there's an equivalent possibility in 7 dimensions, which is, say, flip a minus and a plus. And these two are actually not related by any geometric symmetry. So in 7 dimensions, we actually reach this problem where it's no longer enough to say how many pluses and how many minuses you have. You also have to specify where you stick them on the torus. So at first sight, it now looks like there are two inequivalent perturbative compactifications. Greg looks unhappy again. they're not equivalent, actually. At least in perturbative string theory, there are two inequivalent or interval configurations of this kind.
So how do you see that they're connected by going away from the moduli space in this description?
What's connected?
So before we said that they're connected by going away from flat connections if you're working on the hadronic side.
Same thing here. Yeah.
Go away from
that, you only blessed by
the
fact that the last one. Oh, no, so you mean
the case with no negation of three? I'm saying in an oriental description, can you?
No, I mean, okay.
Connect them or not?
Hmm.
And if so, how
do you? Well, this case is kind of unusual because there's no gate symmetry floating around. But in cases with gate symmetry, I think the argument would be basically the same. You have the gauge bond door, you have some connection in space time, you can try to give it some energy.
But here, move your intervals. Where you put the plus on one corner versus the other corner, they don't connect it at all.
No. It's strange. This is actually very strange. I think we basically convinced ourselves that there are two perturbative string compactifications with no gauge symmetry. That this and the naive compactification of no base structure are not the same, perturbatively. We're not yet convinced that they're distinct non-perturbatively. But that's much harder to check. not easy at all.
Sorry. I don't understand what the rules are for where you put pluses and minuses here. Couldn't you do this in several different ways? There are different.
A bunch of them have become equivalent under. SL3Z, whatever. Yeah, discrete rotations that will map a bunch of them into each other. Just like plus, minus, minus, plus.
You have to check all the SL.
Right. You have to check how many are actually distinct, and there actually were distinct choices here.
In the dimensional case, you said that this type 1 is equivalent to this non-vector structure of the perturbative string.
Yeah.
But there is some duality between them, right? How do you prove that the moduli space is connected?
Between what? Between?
How do you show that the type 1 is dual to the non-vector structure?
There's a t-duality between these, actually.
T-duality between type 1 and the perturbative.
It's both type 1. Right? So, or,
can you turn plus into minus?
No. Or maybe the anti, but no bar preserving. And then you see when it condensed down to some supersymmetric vacuum, that's interesting, yeah. Why not? Actually, I think you would, because in dual pictures, right, only four planes will look like combinations of PQ brains, and you're sort of, you want to nucleate brain antibody combinations along that line, but okay. Oh, let me give a punchline of some kind. Get to a punchline. Okay. We have all these components. So we have these components, and in addition, we found two new components. One new component. One of these is no vector structure, compactified down, and the other one is something that looks new at first sight. So the oriental picture has given us another component. It appears in this moduli space, which is not connected. Not one, two. Sorry. No vector structure sits inside the Z2 triple, so they're equivalent. These two inequivalent arrangements are both new components in the moduli space at first sight, down in seven dimensions, that we haven't seen from a hadronic picture. So they shouldn't have any kind of hadronic rule. Okay. I want to make one more point here about.
What about the
other
two cases? 7
minuses
and 1
plus? Those are not consistent as perturbative or intervals. Well, if you look at, well, this, if you classify this group, you'll find that those choices don't appear. Yeah, you can't have an odd number of pluses.
You can have all those intentions if you want to.
No, it's not supersymmetry. Supersymmetry is not the problem. I mean, the problem is that there's no consistent. Okay. Let me come to the final part of this story and explain. Okay, in the case of Z2, which contained a CHL string. Sam and Schwartz gave us a very pretty dual in terms of M theory. So for the trivial component, M theory on K3 is a dual. It has the same lattice. For in 7, in 6 dimensions. Okay. In 6 dimensions, Sam and Schwartz gave a dual of this form. It was a K3 at a special point in this moduli space where it admitted a Z2 quotient. K3s with automorphisms were classified by Nikulin. So this is a Nikulin K3, which admitted a Z2. So we acted with K3 on, we acted with the Z2 on K3, preserving the holomorphic 2 form, and we act by a shift on S1, so it's actually a free action. So this is actually a free quotient. This is in 6 dimensions. A free quotient, so it's a nice, smooth compactification of supergravity. You can take the space to be very big, which has exactly the right moduli space to be a dual to the CHL string, which is also in the same moduli space as the Z2 triple, which is also in the same moduli space as no vector structure. So all of these things had this very pretty M3 dual. Now, if you reduced on the circle from M3 to type 2A, you would get type 2A on K3 mod Z2, and you would see some kind of Ramond one-form flux. Now, because this is a free quotient, well, if we can naturally ask what the higher dimensional analogs of this geometric dual should be. For example, what would be dual to the 7-dimensional construction that we described there? And
I'm sorry, what do you mean by one-form flux? What exactly?
No, there's no, I mean, the field strength is torsion, you know, right? There's no field strength for, what do I mean? I mean, we should classify, what are we classifying? We're classifying basically line bundles over this K3 mod Z2. So, what we, okay. They're going to jump all over me for not using K3 for this discussion, but K3 will give the same result here. When we classify a one-form flux in a space emitting a G quotient, say X, so we're computing values of the gauge field. The gauge field is periodic, so it's taking values in U1. We're computing H1, so it's just one form, and then it's taking the equivariant version of that. Because we should be looking at equivariant bundles on the space X. I don't know if that helps. It's just it's sort of analogous to the B field.
But there's a 2-cycle, I understand.
Is the point that K3 is simply connecting to K3 mod C2?
It's not. That's right. That's right.
Circle, so you can take some.
Yeah, you can have a twist in this case because of the quotient.
Alice flux or whatever.
Right.
If you go around, the charge changes the sign.
That's right. So sort of analogously for these cases, there are compactifications. There are other Nikulin K3s that emit automorphisms through one-to-one correspondence with those groups at the end there. Z3 should have been this. And there's a Z4, etc. Z5, Z6. And actually, in 6 dimensions, there's a Z7 and a Z8. So in each of these cases, we have nice, smooth supergravity duals to hadronic with this triple, which are just given by these Nikulin quotients. And in fact, there's an additional choice. There are additional choices in 6 dimensions, which would correspond to asymmetric orbifolds that you can't construct in 7, but you can construct in 6. So as you go down, you can see again the number of components changes in a nice way. Now, to get to get back up to seven dimensions, it's natural to pass from M theory to F theory. And we can do that, actually, certainly in this case. This guy has an F theory limit. In this case. Every case except Z7 and Z8, which don't have F theory limits. There's an elliptic fiber, yeah, so this...
Is K3, or does the S1 part of the elliptic fiber?
No, K3 is actually... It's actually F3 on a smooth space again. When we lift it.
The elliptic fiber lives only in the
K3. Only in the K3, right. So actually, what's interesting here is that these guys are elliptically fibered, but they don't have sections. And we have this... You arrive at this very nice picture, which I'll just explain kind of heuristically, which is if you have F3 without a section, and you try to take the F3 limit of a space without section, what you find that you're doing is the following. So CHL, let's recall CHL was just going around the circle and flipping 2E8s. If you try to decompactify CHL to go up to 10 dimensions, if you looked at the lattice, you would think that the lattice you left with just had a single E8 factor. But that would be wrong. In actuality, when you decompactify it, you just go back up to the full component, the standard E8 component with 2E8s. And the analogous picture, there's an analogous picture for F3 without a section, namely, as you try to take the F3 limit of that space, shrink the elliptic fiber, you're decompactifying the circle with a twist. So you're actually going to connect onto a component in higher dimensions that, a much bigger component than you would have thought. You don't get a new compactification. Decompactification. Does that make any sense?
It half makes sense. That's why I would like, but I could hear you say more.
Okay. It's actually a rather interesting point. But the picture, I mean, the physical picture is definitely this, that F3 on a space without section is equivalent, really, it's really M3 on that space across the circle with some action on the circle which is non-trivial. And so there isn't really no smooth decompactification limit that takes you up in dimension. So when you actually try to take it away, you're really taking away a Wilson line or a twist or something on the circle, and you actually change the physics, even though you thought that you could just decompactify it. And that's exactly what happens here. If you take these two components, which have elliptic vibrations but don't have sections, try to lift them to 8 dimensions, you just latch on to the regular E8 cross E8 component.
What's the connection to not having a section? Why does
those two things correspond? The fact that you latch onto the regular component? From?
Yeah, if you started with something, what do you do section?
Okay. So we can see it very explicitly. What's an explanation of what's happening, actually, when you don't have a section? So half of it is not something you can actually show directly, but we can see it just by matching lattice factors and seeing that we're decompactifying a lattice component, which is not... It's not an honest circle. It's not just the circle that you get from compactification.
In some sense, when you go to infinite volume, then can you think of this as having something like an isolated instanton, or sort of that you're moving up to infinity or a polyton where this topology is supported?
I think it's more that you glued into a component of the moduli space where you admitted this twist. Which is just a smaller component of the moduli space than you thought you actually had, and that essentially the same thing that you see here. If you just try to take this thing huge, intuitively it's clear that you're going to get back E8 cross E8 as you go to 10 dimensions, right?
Right.
And that, the effect of that twist should, in a sense, become weaker as you take the circle bigger and bigger. But if you just looked at the lattice, you wouldn't see that, or you'd see.
Another signal this would be that there would be some moldable cover of the S1 where there was a section.
Yeah, you would see. Yeah, you can see that, right? You take the Jacobian vibration of the. Yeah, if you take the Jacobian of that space, it would have a section. But then that would be the signal that you're actually decompactifying this thing and getting rid of the twist.
Okay. You have a lot of K3 that you want to lift to F theory. It means make them elliptically fiber. So how do the group like C2 up to C8 act on the fiber, and how do they act on the base?
Right. So. That's actually a complicated story. Depending on how, so this was actually classified, the actions of these groups G on the base and on the fiber, and in some cases it will act in such a way that it preserves a section, and in some cases it acts in such a way that it doesn't preserve a section. And viewing it as an elliptic fibration in different, so you can do this elliptic.
It always permutes the multi-section.
It always permutes the multi-section, right. Right. The S1 factor is actually kind of critical here. It sort of is the opposite of what you might have thought otherwise. I always get backwards which way around it acts. But, oh boy. Final comments. How am I doing for time? Am I late?
Well, how much more do you need?
Just a couple more minutes. I just want to get to one final point, actually. A
couple more minutes.
Okay, I'll mention very briefly that you can replace K3 by T4 in this construction. So you could also have considered AM or F theory on this base. And G here is Z2, Z3, Z4, or Z6. The Z2 case is actually equivalent to this plus minus or interval compared to light down. So that's not actually new, and you can see that the moduli spaces are actually green. The other three components are actually new. They don't have any hydraulic dual that we know of, and they don't seem to have any other known realization. So they have kind of unusual looking lattices, but they can be studied in an analogous way from this F-theory side. I want to just get to one final punchline. This is a two-way compactification with one-form flux. I think the one-form flux is actually something we understand reasonably well at this point, because it has a very beautiful geometric interpretation in terms of twists, some line bundle in type 2A, and some M-theory smooth compactification that we can see and understand completely. And in this case, this calculation of equivariant cohomology agrees with a K-theory calculation that one could do to isolate the one-form flux. And the entire picture is very coherent. But there's another part of the story which is actually much more confusing, even in the CHL case. If we go back to CHL, we noted that there was an orientable dual description, this plus, minus, minus, minus thing, which when you compactify down to seven dimensions would be two pluses and six minuses. Now, an orientable six plane O6 plus has an M-theory description. So let me remind you, O6 minus lifts in M-theory to M-theory on the Itier-Hitchin manifold. A D6 plane would lift to M-theory in the Taub-Knot space. And you can put combinations of D6 planes and O6 planes together to get various geometries, hyperkähler geometries. And O6 plus doesn't. It lifts to something, lifts to a D4 singularity in M-theory, which you can see in the geometry of a probe. If you probe it with a D2 brain and look at the gauge theory on the D2 brain, you'll see a moduli space with a D4 singularity. But that D4 singularity can't be resolved, at least from the gauge theory perspective. And also for this moduli space to make sense. So we're led, by looking at the M theory description of this orientophole, we're led to an additional description of the CHL string as M theory on some K3. So this will become a K3 with two frozen D4 singularities. Now, how are they frozen? Well, they're frozen presumably because of some discrete flux going through the singularity, some kind of three-form flux. And I'm going to call it a Z2 flux because it's associated with this Z2 triple in this sort of chain of reasoning. Now, you could have guessed that M3 on a K3 with these frozen singularities would be a dual just by looking at the complement of the triple lattice in the K3 lattice. That was why I bothered to write down these complements. So here you would have seen D4 plus D4 right away and said, well, if I put M3 in this K3 with frozen D4s, we'll have an identical moduli space to the Z2 triple. You can do something completely analogous for these cases. E6 plus E6, E7 plus E7, E8 plus E8, for two cases, and you will get, it's natural to conjecture that M3 on a K3 with these sets of frozen singularities is another dual description of the triple in seven dimensions. It will have an identical moduli space. So So then you can ask, what's the rule for assigning these fluxes, three-form fluxes, to these singularities? And you come up with the following table. So for a D4 singularity, D4 plus N, there's a Z2 flux. An E6 singularity is Z2 and Z3. An E7 singularity.
Fluxes of what?
These are fluxes of whatever the three-form in M theory is.
Okay, so these are fluxes for the
three-form.
Three-form potential.
So it should be flux over four manifolds, right? Flux through
four manifolds. Well, now it's a flux through the S3 that's around the singularity, right?
So what you're saying concretely is the exponential e to the I integral of C3 over a certain three-sigma.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what I'm saying concretely. I'm saying we have experimental evidence from looking at this that there should exist compactifications.
Huh?
It's not the no, this is the street flux. Why would you think? No, no.
Yeah, right, so
it feels
strange.
No.
It's not
just
flux.
It's
continuous
with
periodic. We don't know what to call it. It's literally on K3.
There's, yeah.
You don't want to call it Wilson.
There's no. He's not global overfalls even.
We surround the singularity. You switch, right? So you were doing K3 mod Z2 for a while, now you're making a new claim that literally in theory on K3.
That's right. With this set of frozen singularities. With this set of frozen singularities.
Then what are these three
things? No. This is not. See, okay, so there's a bunch of different fixes.
Is the singularity linked by some three manifold? Is the singularity linked by some three manifold?
This is something that
I don't know what that means. What do you mean?
So, can you surround the three manifold?
It's exactly this overflow thing. Yeah. It's exactly this quotient of C2.
Okay. So you're talking about the value of e to the I integral of C3 over that three manifold.
We're claiming this discrete choice for that.
What three manifold?
That's kind of true.
There should be H.
I don't think that is.
So there should be H3 torsion. That's right.
Yeah, something analogous.
Exactly.
It's
complete price.
Which keeps you from following it up.
That's right.
It's different because it's not associated with H, which would be the same.
Exactly. That's exactly it. So let me just run through the story one more time. We have perturbative heroic compactifications associated to these triples and naturally to these groups with given moduli spaces. That's one picture. We have smooth M-theory compactifications associated with these Nikulin quotients. Those have F-theory lips which are also smooth, right? It's F-theory on a smooth space still, and there's no fluxes involved. If you reduce on this circle, we also have type 2A with a Ramon-Ramon flux classified by this. That's one picture. In the case of the Z2 triple, we have a further picture, a further orientable tool, which has a natural M-theory interpretation in terms of M-theory on a singular K3, which is not a global overflow, with two D4s and some Z2 flux going through two D4s that prevents you from deforming them. That's a completely different picture from all of the others, and one that a priori we don't know how to concretely, you know, state that this is what you should compute to see that. And then, since we have natural candidates for the other triples, it's natural for us to conjecture that these choices of flux are possible for these other singularities.
So where do you get the other faces, like the Z2 and E6, what does that correspond to?
The Z2, which, so the Z2 is coming from the Z2 triple, right?
What happens if you put it on an E6 singularity,
what do you get? You can't. See,
so what does that mean?
Right, so in some of these cases, but you can enhance the gate symmetry in some of these cases. So you can see that some singularities will support, for instance, E6 will support Z2 and Z3, but not simultaneously.
But E6 is the singularity.
E6 is a singularity, right.
So, could you imagine, Kevin, if you look at this from the point of view of M-theory membrane,
yeah.
that perhaps in the theory of membranes there will be some kind of twist
phase.
Second.
Yeah, there's some kind of phase associated, which is given precisely by...
No, but if you reproduce this K3 as a factor by some discrete group, then perhaps you would have some kind of twisted sectors, and it will be like the choice of the sign for RT2 in our interval case.
Just
to throw
out a random
thought,
you know, like H3 of these things with...
Yeah. I do, though. I couldn't reproduce it for you right now. So if you do if you just compute the equivariant cohomology of this, of H3 of this, you will get something which looks completely different at first sight. There is, sorry, okay, let me say, back in, even in this D4 plus D4 case, if you compute the equivariant cohomology of the K3 with that, that case you can write is a global, okay, you can take a global order form of T4 by D4 hat. Actually, there are many, there are like three or four ways in which D4 hat can act on, finally dihedral group can act on T4. But you take one of them, which has the right lattice structure. If you compute equivariant cohomology associated to that action, you will find that there is a choice of three-form flux, which is localized at, which has homonymy around the S3 surrounding those two D4s in the resulting space, singular space. And so, you know, you might imagine that with suitable equations of motion killing the other choices, you would, you know, that would be a possible candidate. But that's cohomology. You can try to compute equivariant K theory, which is something that has been going on for the last few days, and again, it gives you results that don't seem to agree with the rules that we see from this experimental data. In type 2A, you can clamp on a circle, these frozen cases on a circle, and just consider type 2A, a weak coupling, and ask how would you get to, say, this D4 plus D4 business already, which we know exists.
Do you know H3 with G, H3 sub G of these spaces with U1 coefficients?
Yeah.
Or even just a discrete group?
Yeah, it doesn't, actually, I think it doesn't agree with this. If I know in certain cases at the moment, so I can't give you a complete story, but I mean, I think almost every straightforward calculation that you might imagine doing so far, at least at the, so this is all still kind of up in the air at the moment, I'd say. But every straightforward calculation we tried has not agreed with these rules.
I have a comment then, which is possibly relevant to this, which is that what the Arkanescu and I showed was that only after summing over torsion sectors in M theory and summing over torsion sectors in type 2A are physical quantities equal. Mm-hmm. But there is not a one-to-one correspondence between between field configurations with torsion and field configurations with torsion in the two theories.
It's
non-trivial that the sum yeah. over different torsion groups in M theory and in case and in type 2A.
Okay.
And it's non-trivial that the two sums over torsion, over the different torsion groups actually agree.
I don't understand why.
It's not obvious to
me. I agree.
You actually have to have the one-to-one correspondence.
Okay. I see the point. The thing that's hard to understand is if I had a non-compact space, why would I have to sum over choices of flux on that space?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't see a priori why that would, you know.
Do these things, you told us the triples for EA, do those agree to holistic triples for those other? So if I ask over triples in E7, but I've gotten
a list of flux. Oh, you mean for the... Well, this is—I mean, these are all the consistent string classification.
Yeah, no,
I mean, you're just taking a generic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You could right. You could try to, but then you would want to take the complement in like gamma 3 plus C7 plus C7.
For different
percent,
I think you do with Z2, right?
Yeah. No, there's something strange and bizarre going on in this story that we don't. I mean, there's obviously a lot here we don't understand at the moment, but right. But understanding this, this is really, at least in the perturbative string limit, you would hope to be able to correctly classify these fluxes and see what's happening. But...
So you say these things don't get connected if we're just connectifying another S1, say those words.
Well, okay, so what we want to conjecture is that there is a T duality, well, I'm not quite sure why I should, okay, there's a perturbative T duality, which will take a K3 emitting a Nicoulin quotient, should have this Riemann one-form flux, it would change the set of singularities and convert the one-form into three-form flux and map one to the other. Now that looks outlandish at first sight, but it does, it actually seems plausible for D4 plus D4, and doesn't seem incredibly unlikely that should be true in the other cases too. So at the moment, I don't have an independent argument for why M3 with these fluxes should exist. That's one problem.
Don't those two-way things on that quotient look like they're sitting on K3 mod T2 if you just point of view to that? I mean, mod T2. Because you just don't see the S1s.
Right. Right, they look exactly. They look like the K3 stock at that point where it's emitting.
No, not just the stock at that point. It was like a K3 mod T2.
Seems like we're kind of getting into discussion here.
No, right. if it were not. This was the punchline. Yeah. We're in the discussion, thanks. Anyway, so let me.